Welcome to the Dollars and Cents Radio Show with your host, accountant and author Carol Topp, the homeschool CPA. Join Carol as she shares her knowledge on a topic of interest to everyone, money. On the show, Carol will discuss starting and running a micro business, teaching your kids about money, and managing money in a homeschool organization. Carol takes confusing topics such as money and business and puts them into clear English. She's ready to share her knowledge with you on today's show.
Hi, this is Carol Topp, the host of the Dollars and Cents Show, and welcome to episode number 47. I'm going to be talking about tax-exempt status for homeschool support groups. You know, back in episode number 41, I did a podcast called Who's Afraid of the Big Bad IRS? And I took about 5 minutes to talk about how the IRS sees homeschool support groups, but I want to flesh that out a little bit more and talk a little bit more about that and give some helpful information to homeschool support groups about their status with the IRS. So I just attended a webinar put on by the IRS, and it was specifically about 501c7 social clubs. Now, I doubt very much that you are interested in listening to an IRS webinar. They're not all that interesting, except I wanted to learn specifically what the IRS said about 501c7 social clubs, because I believe that most homeschool support groups will fit the classification of 501c7 social clubs. The IRS has that as a tax-exempt status. So the whole time I'm listening to this hour-long webinar from the IRS, I'm thinking about homeschool support groups. And I came away thinking at the end what I had thought at the beginning, which is, yes, this tax-exempt status of 501c7 social club really fits homeschool support groups pretty well, very well, matter of fact. And so I'm going to take this podcast to explain to you what that means and what the IRS told me in this webinar. Okay, so first of all, let me explain that there are certain requirements to be considered what the IRS calls a social club. And let me say, for the most part, social clubs are things like, you know, your typical gardening club, bicycling club, hunting club, gun club, any kind of club, but also country clubs and fraternities and sororities are the most kind of clubs out there. But basically, the IRS started out by saying you must be a club. Now, a lot of times, homeschool support groups don't call themselves clubs, but the IRS goes on to define a club, meaning that the individuals, members involved, have a common interest. Well, that's homeschool support groups. We have individuals who are members, and the common interest is homeschooling. So there we go. That's the definition of a club that seems to work. But the IRS says in order to get tax-exempt, tax-free status as a social club, there's some other criteria. You have to be organized for pleasure, recreation, or some other non-profitable purpose that's similar to pleasure or recreation. Okay, well, I'd say most support groups, and hey, I homeschooled for 14 years, retired how long ago? 5 years ago when my youngest graduated from high school. I still go to homeschool support group meetings, and I go for pleasure. I go for social interaction with other homeschool parents. I go for pleasure. And I do get great support and some frequently great information, but mostly it's there, obviously, in the name, to support each other, to be socially interactive with each other. The IRS says there must be face-to-face commingling. Face-to-face, that's a good old-fashioned idea in this age of, you know, Facebook groups and virtual friends. But one of the requirements as a club is that you have to have face-to-face commingling of the members. And I think I already touched on it, but the members are individuals, not businesses. So if you're, you know, or corporations or something like that. Okay, well, that seems to be tracking pretty well with homeschool support groups, right? Well, the IRS goes on to say that substantially all of your activities must be for your recreational or, social purposes. Again, most homeschool co-ops say have substantially all their activities for the idea of getting together for recreation. Now, they might add things like field trips, and this is where a homeschool support group can become so big and so popular that they start offering lots and lots of wonderful activities to their members, like field trips, and then sometimes they start adding co-ops. And this is where I think we kind of start leaning the activities a little more towards educational activities. And when you lean a little more towards educational activities, your support group kind of might becoming kind of morphing and changing. It might become more focused on education and less on, you know, just pleasure, recreation, and social activities. So if your support group has changed and morphed and added more educational activities, you might seriously need to consider changing your tax-exempt status to be a 501c3 educational organization. And I guess the best thing to recommend to you there is my book called The IRS and Your Homeschool Organization. And then in that book, I talk about the difference between these two different tax-exempt statuses, 501c3, which has a charitable, religious, or educational purpose, versus 501c7, which their purpose is pleasure, social, recreation. Okay. But like I said, substantially all of the activities of a 501c7 social club have to be for the pleasure, social, recreational purposes. And the IRS goes on to actually put a dollar amount on that. The IRS loves to measure things with dollars. And here's what they say, that basically up to 35% of your receipts meaning the money that comes in, can be from outside your membership. So in other words, 65% of your income has to come from your membership dues, or they define dues in pretty broad sense, but dues, admissions, stuff like that. So in other words, 65% of your money has to come from your members, okay? You can have other sources of income like fundraisers. That's pretty typical, box tops for education or something like that. Although, side note here, box tops for education does not let 501c7 social clubs participate. You must have 501c3 educational status in order to participate in box tops. But other kind of fundraisers could make up to 35%. So just make sure that of your receipts, just make sure that most of your money is coming from your membership dues. And you know what? I find as I talk to homeschool support groups across the country, that's pretty common. They say, hey, all of our money comes from our membership dues. Okay. Couple other things the IRS says about social clubs, 501c7 social clubs, that they say no part of your earnings can go to the benefit of any of the specific members. So in other words, you have pooled your money together for the good of the group. It's not supposed to funnel down to individuals. And I'd say, yeah, I think we all know that. In other words, you should not be setting up any individual fundraising accounts. You know, if somebody raises some money and you say, oh, you did such a good job with fundraising, we'll let you pay for your field trip this way. No, that would be taking the money, the earnings of the organization, and funneling it down to individuals' benefits. No, you're supposed to benefit the group. But hey, most of us do that. And finally, one thing the IRS mentioned in this webinar that kind of gave me concern at first. And here's what they said, that social clubs cannot have a written policy which discriminates against individuals seeking membership on the basis of race, color, or religion. Now, that means that you cannot discriminate against people wanting to join based on their religion. And that might give you a cause for concern if you are a faith-based organization. You might say, wait a minute, we do discriminate on the basis of religion. A lot of the homeschool support groups I deal with are faith-based, usually Christian homeschool groups, and they say we have a statement of faith. We have a written policy that says, here's our statement of faith, you have to agree to it. And when I read that, I got kind of shocked, like, oh no, what? Christian support groups can't have a statement of faith, or they can't discriminate on the basis of religion? Well, like many things with the IRS, you have to dig a little deeper in order to find out what they're getting at, okay? So, they did explain in this webinar, and it is also explained elsewhere on the IRS website, that there are two exceptions to this no discrimination policy. No, actually, what the IRS specifically says is there cannot be a written policy that discriminates on the basis of race, color, or religion. Okay. But there are two exceptions. One is if your group is an auxiliary of a religious organization. Okay, that's not true for most support groups. Okay, but the second exception is the one that works for us. And that basically the IRS says, if you discriminate on the basis of religion in a good faith attempt to further the, because the limitation is to further the teachings and principles of the religion, then you can exclude on the basis of religion, but providing you do not exclude a individual of a particular race or color. Whew. Okay, let me unpack that a little bit. So what they're saying is basically if you're the limit of putting a religious discrimination policy like a statement of faith, if the purpose of that is not to exclude certain races or certain colors, but if the purpose of that is to say we are trying to further the teachings and principles of our religion, that's okay. Got that? So if your statement of faith for your homeschool support group is to further the teachings and principles of your faith, that's okay. Just make sure you don't have that statement of faith as a means to try to discriminate anybody of a particular race or color. Okay, I think most of us can live with that, all right? And most of the reasons for having a faith-based homeschool support group is not really to exclude people of certain races or colors at all, no, but it is to further the teachings and principles of the common faith in the group. So most Christian support groups will have a statement of faith and say, in order to be a member here, you have to agree to this statement of faith. That is perfectly okay in the eyes of the IRS for tax-exempt status. Phew! So, when I heard about that exception, that's good. All right? I think most of us can live with that so long as we understand what the purpose of that statement of faith is. Not to exclude people of certain races or colors, but to further the teachings and principles of the faith. So, that's how the IRS describes a 501c7 social club. And as I was going through that, you were probably thinking of your homeschool support group saying, huh, yeah, okay, kind of fits. So, that means you're eligible for tax-exempt status. And a lot of times, homeschool support groups have been in existence for years and years and years and didn't even understand that they had tax-exempt status. They just kind of thought they did. And in general, because what they were doing was just pooling their money, okay, right? Especially things like field trips or parties or, again, the real core of the homeschool support group is just the homeschool parents coming together for support of each other. So basically, the whole idea is you shouldn't be taxed on just this whole idea of you pooling money. So the IRS basically said individuals shouldn't be any worse off because they purchased, quote, recreational or social services as a group than if they had just done it as individuals. So the fact that we're pooling our money to buy a field trip should not mean that we then are worse off because we pooled our money. That's why 501c7 social clubs were given tax-exempt or tax-free status. And you know what? You're given it automatically. You don't even have to go apply to the IRS to be tax-exempt. You just have to fit those characteristics that I just mentioned. And again, I cover them pretty thoroughly in two places. One, my book, The IRS and Your Homeschool Organization, and also on an article on my website at Homeschool CPA. Go to the Leader Tools page, go on to Articles, and it's one right at the top of the page, and it's entitled something like Tax-Exempt Status for Homeschool Support Groups. Okay? So that's a nice thing for you to read, to show to your support group leaders, to discuss as a board, to make sure you're always, keeping in line, especially with that rule about how much money needs to come from members versus fundraisers. Okay, here's one thing I learned from the IRS. Actually, I kind of already knew it, but they confirmed that although 501c7 social clubs do not have to apply to get their tax-exempt status, they can self-declare their tax-exempt status, the IRS says 501c7 social clubs must still file annual information returns with the IRS. Darn. Yeah. Okay. This is something relatively new. In 2007, Congress passed a law at the request of the IRS saying all tax-exempt organizations need to tell the IRS at least once a year that they exist and give some basic information. The IRS created a new form called a 990-N. They call it their electronic postcard. It's filed online. And it asks 8 questions, so it's pretty simple to file it. Take you like 5 minutes once a year. So that's good. So you're eligible to file the 990-N if you're a small organization, meaning you bring in less than $50,000 in a calendar year, or in your year, fiscal year or calendar year. Anyway, most homeschool support groups bring in a whole lot less than $50,000. So that's good. Okay, we're eligible to file this short, quick 990-N. But here's two problems with it, okay? Two problems. One is if you fail to file it 3 years in a row, your tax-exempt status is automatically revoked. Ugh. And so probably a lot of you support group leaders didn't know about this requirement, didn't know they were supposed to be filing 990-Ns. So even though it's easy, if you don't know about it, you don't do it. 3 years have gone by, and the IRS has yanked your tax-exempt status, except that they probably don't know you exist because you never had to apply, right, to get tax-exempt status, so you're not in their database. All right. That's the second problem. You're not in their database. You can't file the 990-Ns. If you try to go on the 990-N website, you would type in your employer identification name, your number, and try to file it. They'd say, you don't exist in the IRS database, so you can't file this thing. That means you have to call the IRS. I don't like calling the IRS. I'm sure you don't either. You have to call them and tell them you're a 501c7 social club and that you want to get into the database so you can file the 990-Ns. All right. If you are past the 3 years and you haven't filed, you're automatically revoked. The IRS says you can get it back, but it takes paperwork and it takes a fee. The IRS says if your status was revoked, and it probably was if you didn't do this thing for 3 years, which would have been starting in 2007. So in 2010, lots of organizations had their tax-exempt status revoked. The IRS says you can get it back. You just have to apply for it now. But you didn't have to before, remember? But now you have to apply for it and give them a $400 fee. I help organizations do that. It's a IRS form called Form 1024. It's about 6 pages long. I can help you do that. I'll put some information in the show notes over at the Dollars and Cents Show. Look at episode number 47, Tax Exempt Status for Your Homeschool Group. Okay, I'm going to take a little break because I know that was a lot for you to absorb. But when I come back, I want to talk about your status with your state. We've been talking about the IRS, but I want to talk about support groups and their status in their state and some recommendations I have for you.
Homeschool leader, do you feel confused or overwhelmed by the job of running your homeschool group? You're not alone. Carol Topp, the homeschool CPA, is here to help. Carol is an accountant, author, and retired homeschool mom who understands you. Her website has helpful information on co-ops, paying workers, and managing the money in a homeschool group. If you need personalized advice, set up a consultation with Carol. She's happy to discuss your particular situation. Visit homeschoolcpa.com today and get the information you need to successfully run your homeschool group.
Okay, well, welcome back. We've been talking about status for homeschool support groups. And in particular, I was talking about tax-exempt status that is granted by the IRS to homeschool support groups. Most frequently, probably 99% of the time, homeschool support groups fit the description of 501c7 social clubs. So, but I now want to talk to you about, you know, maybe before you go to the IRS, you ought to think about your status with your state, because it is the state that grants nonprofit corporation status. Now, and that's something I think you really ought to think about seriously, okay? Because, let me explain that Usually when a homeschool support group starts, they are what the law would call an unincorporated nonprofit association. Okay, that's like three words there. Unincorporated, meaning you have not formed a corporation. Nonprofit, because you have a motive that is just not to make a profit. You're not in business. You're not there to make money for the owner. You're run usually by a board, and you have a nonprofit purpose, which in a homeschool support group case is social, recreational, or pleasure. Okay. So you are an unincorporated nonprofit association gathering of people. And that's how most homeschool support groups have existed and been pretty happy with that status for a long time. But I'm going to tell you there are some reasons now that maybe you strongly ought to consider nonprofit corporation status in your state. It's because there are some benefits to being a nonprofit corporation, and the downfall or the disadvantages are really not that bad, not that much at all. I think the benefits of nonprofit corporation in your state greatly outweigh the disadvantages. So let me talk about those. Here's the benefits of nonprofit corporation status in your state. You get it from your Secretary of State. It gives your leaders what's called limited liability. So it gives them some protection if there is some lawsuit or if a child is injured and the insurance company wants to come after the group. They'll have to come after the group, literally, not individuals. Okay, so it means that you can say, hey, you know, you're suing me for whatever reason a group might get sued. You can take the money that's in the corporation, which is probably the money in your checking account, but you can't go against the individual's money. You can't go get their individual money. So that's it. It's called limited liability, and that's one of the greatest reasons why you do it. It also is a very good thing to do things in the name of the corporation if you're paying anybody. You know, if you're paying workers, if you're paying independent contractors, or if you are renting space, or if you need an insurance policy. All these things are then done in the name of the corporation, not the name of this group of people, which would be that unincorporated association. So I think it's also really important now in this day and age for your articles of incorporation. This is the paperwork that you file with the state to become a nonprofit corporation. I think it's really important now to state quite clearly what your purpose is in that document. And if you're a faith-based organization, especially a Christian organization, it is very important that you state that in your articles of incorporation. And if you've never created articles of incorporation or any kind of document, a lot of support groups don't, and now might be the time to seriously think about that. You know, go out on my website, read up on the benefits of nonprofit incorporation, and seriously consider doing that. What it means, though, is that you have created a new legal entity. Okay, and you might state your purpose as educational and religious, maybe just educational if you're not faith-based, but it's a really good idea if you do have a statement of faith to be quite clear in these articles that you now have an educational and a religious purpose, or maybe just a religious purpose because you really don't have a strong educational purpose. You're a social club, right, that's made up of faith-based or Christian homeschoolers. Okay. When you file articles of incorporation with the state, you state your purpose. There's just some paperwork involved, but you become a new legal entity. And usually, let me back up, it's not very expensive. The most expensive fee I've seen is here in my home state of Ohio, where the state charges $125 one-time fee. Most states charge $30, usually $50 or less, some definitely $100 or less. Okay, Ohio's the only one I've seen that's over $100, but it's a one-time fee. You file it, and there might be some annual reporting requirements just to say, hey, the corporation is still alive and kicking. Here in Ohio, we only have to report in once every 5 years. That's not too bad, but a lot of states want an annual report that just says the corporation is still alive. Okay, otherwise they'll think that your corporation died. So Anyway, what I'm trying to say is I think it's a really good idea to consider nonprofit corporation status. I started to say what happens, though, is you have become a new legal entity, new, like a new birth. A new baby has been born. The old organization, that unincorporated association, that one dies. It went away. A new organization is formed, which might mean you want a new name. Maybe not. Maybe you can go with the old name. Just put Inc. after it. That's okay. You probably need to drop bylaws, get a little more organized with those articles of incorporation. And you need a new employer identification number. That's very important. You have formed a new legal entity if you become a nonprofit corporation in your state. You need a new employer identification number. You get those from the IRS. Then you're going to have to go to your bank and say, just form this new nonprofit corporation. We're a social club. And we have this new employer identification number from the IRS. They're easy to get. They're free. Okay. I cover that in my book, Money Management in a Homeschool Organization. But just make sure you do it right. Use consistent language with the state and with the IRS. You go to the bank and you say, I'm a new nonprofit corporation, a social club, and I have a new employer identification number. I need to open up a new checking account. And you need to do that so that you now have a new birth date, a new organization has been formed. And then you can move the money from the old organization with the board approval, put it in the minutes, and start a fresh, start new. Then you call the IRS and say, I have just formed a new nonprofit corporation. It is a 501c7 social club, and I would like to get in the database to start filing my 990Ns. That's the process of doing that. If you have any questions, and I'm sure you do, because all this is new, and I've just thrown a whole bunch of letters and numbers and words at you, it can be more than a little confusing. You know what? Drop me an email, carol@homeschoolcpa.com. I'm happy to set up a phone call with your organization, with your leadership. A lot of times boards gather, put me on speakerphone. We can talk through anything that's confusing. We can talk through any concerns or issues your leaders might have. I've worked with over 200 homeschool groups right now. And we're only just still getting out word about the IRS tax-exempt status, about that required 990N, about groups not knowing they had to file it and having lost their tax-exempt status. And some of them are in the process of doing the paperwork with my help to get it back. Okay. For the most part, don't worry. You will not owe back taxes for the most part. There might be some circumstances where you do, but no, usually the IRS is I'm not going to say they're understanding. They have a process for you to go through to get your tax-exempt status reinstated. It involves paperwork. It involves a fee. But it's just done once, and then you're set to go again. So anyway, I hope that's been helpful. I hope you understand a little bit more about 501c7 social club status for homeschool support groups. And hey, I hope you take a listen to some of the other podcasts that I have to help homeschool leaders, as well as read. But my blog posts over at Homeschool CPA, read my books. This will all help you get the knowledge you need to run your organizations better. Homeschooling is growing. Homeschool groups are growing. You're doing a great thing by leading a homeschool support group. And it's just wise to make sure it is in good shape, both legally and financially, to go forward into a very successful future. So I wish you the best. And hey, also, if you have enjoyed this podcast, I sure would appreciate you putting a positive review over at iTunes, or tell other leaders about it. Hey, you might want to benefit another leader that might not know about some of these requirements. So please go ahead and share it in your social media, email, whatever it takes to get out word that we want to do things right as homeschoolers, and we want to protect our rights to homeschool our kids, as well as our religious rights if you are a faith-based or Christian organization. So thanks very much for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining the Dollars and Cents Radio Show with Carol Topp here at the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. For more helpful information, visit Carol at her website, homeschoolcpa.com.